Q.
Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside Jolly Roger's studio. This is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're with us online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks as always for tuning in. If you're not aware, we are the show which brings to you our review every week of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here, Jolly Roger's studio, where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. That and our weekly top three list, always inspired by the movie in question. And this week, the movie in question is the much-awaited and much-hailed 2007 P.T. Anderson film, There Will Be Blood. Yeah. Yeah, I think we've waited for this one a little while, right?
Yeah. Well, it was off.
We just didn't know, back on. We didn't know when to pounce.
As soon as it came back on.
As soon as it came back on, okay. This film stars Daniel Day-Lewis and once again written and directed by P.T. Anderson. Our friend, you know, queued up.
He's a bud.
Yeah, you know it. What's the movie we talked about? Punch Drunk Love, yeah, a few weeks ago. So we're going to revisit his work tonight.
All right.
And so if you've seen that film, I think a lot of people have.
I think a few people have seen it.
There Will Be Blood. You just keep listening to see if you agree or disagree with our take on it. Or if not, you know what? Hey, even better, right? Even better. That way you keep listening to see if it's something you want to queue up yourself.
Right.
Right.
That's the way the game is kind of played.
Kind of. Yeah. Backwards.
A little bit. But I'm Michael, along with, as always, to my left, James Hardsub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Savage. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Usually I go into a little song and dance about how great my week is. I'm just going to leave it as fantastic.
Fantastic.
And to your left, there he is, Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear.
Hey. Hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hi. I have milkshake that's out my nose.
Yes, you do. Oh, wow. It somehow magically made it into mine. Greatest spit take ever. Hey, can I ask you a question?
Sure, man.
Is self-loathing in a fine sheen of oil considered quality outerwear?
I don't know about quality, but I like it. I wear it. I don it often.
Yeah. Just a little question, a little inside joke. Right. A little something inspired by the film,
right?
Because you would know.
Well,
look at that. Milkshake. That slurp sound is coming from Max Gumbo Johnson to your left.
Hey, what's happening?
I'm ready to talk about... Jesus. All right, let's just go ahead and just not confuse the audience. There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
If you've seen it, you know how beautiful that sound is. Yeah. Those are milkshakes, people. We brought them into the studio.
From where are they from?
They're from Karen's Custards in Smyrna, Tennessee.
Good stuff.
Thank you, Michael. Good.
I was freezing to death keeping these things cool in my car as I drove over here.
It was worth the sacrifice.
45-degree car.
Not really what I was asking, but like, where in the room are they from?
Oh, from across the room. Much better, yes.
There you go.
All right, Max. So we're drinking milkshakes. We're talking about There Will Be Blood, and we're doing that, Max, because you queued this thing up.
I did.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're responsible. I think it's a responsible pick. I think it's a quality pick.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a necessary pick. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But let's not forget about the producer.
Yeah.
He is literally across the room over there. And that's Adam, the Bomb Rogers.
Hello.
Can we talk about what flavor milkshakes we actually had? I had vanilla.
I had the Elvis.
It's a good choice.
Yeah. Strawberry.
Butterscotch.
Chocolate peanut butter.
Chocolate peanut butter. And the Elvis, let's explain that for our overseas listeners.
Chocolate peanut butter banana.
Outstanding. So, milkshake in hand. Review in hand, opinions secretly in hand.
Right.
And let's talk about this. There Will Be Blood. But first thing, let's talk about Keep Up With Us. This is very important. It doesn't matter what you want to do. You, Jesus. What the? You bastard from a basket. Right. Okay. Facebook, Twitter, iTunes. It doesn't matter. Anything you want, Max.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's
it's
so
like
into
like
his milkshake. He's not even paying attention.
Social media.
Anything you want. You know what I'm saying.
Right.
The Q Filmcast, you go there. Google Plus, even the YouTube channel is good, but I say you go to theqfilmcast.net. That's it, Savage. You go there. You can tell us what you think of this episode, any episode.
Yeah.
You can leave us reviews. Tell us what you think. Doesn't matter. You just go there. Visit qfilmcast.net. Best way to keep up with us for sure. So there you are. Let's get into this, guys. There Will Be Blood 2007. Written and directed by P.T. Anderson. Loosely based on the
Upton Sinclair.
Upton Sinclair novel. But I hear very, very loosely based, too. I read up on that. Yeah, it's just really more of a template. But we'll talk about that in detail in just a bit. Selected by Max Gumbo Johnson, as we said. Mm-hmm. So let's get into that first, Max. You queued this up, you say, because it has to be talked about. But I think this is one of your favorite films.
It is definitely one of my favorite movies ever. I lived in this little town in Texas about 70 miles from Houston. I was dying to see this thing. It played in Houston. So I said, I don't know if this thing's going to come anywhere near me. So I drove 70 miles to Houston, watched it, got out, went, bought another ticket, and watched it again.
Wow. What's that tell you?
Yeah.
In one night.
Wow. You didn't understand it? Or
no, I just loved it.
It's what you call a twofer right there. When a film gives you a twofer, give me another one.
Right.
Thank you, sir. Might I have another? Yeah. It did something to you. And I can't wait. You're gonna pull the weight on this one. I want to know why this film made you turn around and go right back in the theater.
Okay.
Mine might have had the same effect on me. I might have ran from the theater. I don't know. yeah, that did inspire a top three at the end. We'll tell you what that is at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be quick and precise and very necessary.
Right.
Before we get into what we thought of the film, let's tell you what the critics thought. We always do this. We're going to do that right now. We're talking about IMDb. We always throw over to those dudes.
Right.
It's dudes and dudettes.
Yeah. Dudettes.
Hard Sub Savage. Yeah. Something point something.
Okay.
What do you think IMDb gave the 2007 film we're going to talk about, There Will Be Blood?
I think they gave him 9.5.
That's a lot of heat. A little too much heat. They gave it 8.1. That's still a good score.
What? Losers.
Yeah, 8.1 on IMDb. But let's see what Rotten Tomatoes gave it. Hoodie, what do you think the critics on Rotten Tomatoes gave this film?
91.
Bing.
Wow.
I didn't cheat.
Wow.
Good on him.
There it is.
First time anybody's ever nailed that precisely. Bullseye.
It just felt right.
All right. All right.
Okay. Absolutely.
Daniel Except for those 9% that were wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Max, users, what did they do? Rotten Tomatoes.
91, I'll go 84.
You guys are good. You're hot. You're coming in with some heat and some smoke off the derrick. That's 86.
86. I almost said 86. Doggone it.
Nicely done.
I'm better.
I know you are.
So here's what we do here. We're going to talk about the film, briefly give a synopsis,
right.
Tell you what it is. I think a lot of people know, but we're going to say it a certain way. And then we're going to take a break, take a quick trailer, drink some milkshake, come back and tell you our opinion. So, yeah, I'll step up the plate and do this one here. This is what you have, 2007, There Will Be Blood. Writer-director Paul Thomas Anderson steps outside of his contemporary world to explain a very different dysfunctional man. An oil pioneer whose trailblazing spirit is equaled only by his murderous ambition. There Will Be Blood is Anderson's loose adaptation of the novel Oil by Upton Sinclair.
It's pronounced oil.
Oil. It's pronounced oil. Oh. I just sounded more like Bane there. Yeah. Daniel Plainview. I got my Bane down. I need to work on my Plainview.
Yeah.
Max, you have that. I'm going to throw over to you all night for that one. By Upton Sinclair. And it focuses its attentions on Daniel Plainview, played by Daniel Day-Lewis. A miner who happens upon black gold during a disastrous excavation that ends up in his broken leg. Pulling himself up from the bowels of the earth, both literally and metaphorically, Plainview embarks on a systematic and steadfast approach to mastering the oil business. Using plain speak and straightforward language, Plainview launches a campaign to convince small-town property owners they should let him drill their land. Without him, they won't have the equipment to access the profit beneath their feet. He builds an empire his way, and gradually becomes obsessed with the intrinsic value of power, growing increasingly fierce and paranoid in the process. But Plainview does meet his match in Eli Sunday, played by Paul Dano, a teenage preacher and soul wrangler in the small California town of Little Boston, who is more than satisfied to make him squirm for the bounty that flows below them. Plainview must suffer the opposing whims of this prophet, whose legitimacy is questionable at best, and it's unclear if either man is prepared to pay the humiliating price the other wants to extract.
I really want to see this.
That sounds like a good movie.
Dang it, I kind of want to see it now, too. I'm like, that is a good film.
Right.
My God. Max, if you suck that anymore, you're going to have a lot of drainage.
I'm almost
drainage.
Out.
Yeah, there will be drainage. There will be no milkshake, but there will be a trailer. And that is right here. We'll come back and tell you what we thought. 2007, There Will Be Blood.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've traveled over half our state to be here tonight. I'm a family man. I run a family business. This is my son and my partner, H.W. Plainview. We offer you the bond of family that very few oilmen can understand. I do my own drilling. And the men that work for me work for me, and they are men I know. Tell me something worth hearing. This money's yours. What would you say if you found advice for this one? When do we get our money?
That's it, ladies and gentlemen.
There Will Be Blood, 2007, written and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, loosely based on the Upton Sinclair novel, starring Daniel Day-Lewis. That's the trailer, and that is the film we're going to talk about. So let's do it. Let's start here. Let's start with some trivia, a little bit of facts and figures about the film.
Okay.
Just to set the tone, because we do that every week, Max. You know
we do. I know. We do. Let's
Cody,
go.
You're aware of this, right?
Let's go.
Did you know Dylan Feaster, who plays my son, H.W. Plainview, the son of Daniel Day-Lewis, did you know he was not an actor? He was an elementary student near the film's West Texas shooting location. His mother had no idea who Daniel Day-Lewis was, so she rented a copy of Gangs of New York.
Bad move. Wow.
She saw Day-Lewis playing Bill the Butcher, terrified her. She said, I don't want him working with this man. So Daniel Day-Lewis, in an attempt to woo her back, sent her a copy of The Age of Innocence. That would terrify me more. I don't want my son being like that.
I would have gone Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah, right.
You think so?
My left foot.
Boom.
Anyways, that's how he wooed her into letting letting Dylan Feaster play H.W.
All right.
Here's a piece of trivia that a lot of people know, and I think it's extremely interesting. Because this film is always in reference to another movie that came out and actually won Best Picture that year, No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
These two films are kind of like
Peas and Carrots.
Johnny and me. Yeah, Peas and Carrots. Mm-hmm. I'm talking some films are like that, like Braveheart and Rob Roy. You know.
Yeah.
You always talk about There Will Be Blood, No Country for Old Men. Okay, but did you know, while on location in Texas, No Country for Old Men was a neighboring film production. One day, P.T. Anderson and his crew tested the pyrotechnical effects in the oil derrick, causing an enormous billowing cloud of smoke. It intruded upon the shot that Joel and Ethan Coen were shooting for No Country for Old Men. They had to shut their shot down.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I didn't know that.
And thus began the beef.
And there's
the
beef.
Where it started.
Damn you, Anderson!
It says here both the films would eventually become the leading contenders for the Academy Award that year. What are the chances?
Fantastic.
Not only are they in proximity with what kind of films they are, they were actually in proximity to where they're being made.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you know Daniel Day-Lewis accepted the role of Daniel Plainview as he had been a fan of Paul Thomas Anderson's previous film, Punch, Drunk Love. That's the film that made him want to work with him.
Go figure. Go.
Anderson, he can make some films.
Yeah, so can Day-Lewis.
From time to time. Yeah. Paul Dano had been originally cast as a much smaller role of Paul Sunday, Eli's brother, and another actor had been cast as Eli. However, after Dano had already started filming one of the scenes, Anderson said, to hell with it. Let's make them identical twins.
There you go.
I remember the first time I saw this film, I'm like, okay, I think they're twins. I wasn't sure.
That's what I figured.
I thought somebody was lying.
Yeah, I thought he was. I think Plainview did too. He's like,
yeah.
Huh. Like, well, we'll get into that. Ball. And that kind of played into the movie too. Yeah.
Very much.
Every Wednesday night during editing, Paul Thomas Anderson and company would have just steak and straight vodka dinner to keep the mentality of Daniel Plainview.
Wow.
It took a year of Day-Lewis just being Daniel Plainview to get ready for the role. He actually spent a year being Daniel Plainview, prepping for the role.
Wow. And it shows.
I'd hate to see him at like a grocery store.
What aisles do you keep the milkshake?
I want to talk about bread.
Do you have any bread in this store?
Where do you keep it?
All right, so let's get into it, guys. The currency. We don't use thumbs up. We don't use stars.
No.
We don't use thumbs down.
No.
Nope.
No, this is dumb.
It's stupid.
It's really stupid. And you know what? Tonight, we're talking about, let's just go to, let's be bold.
Yeah.
1 to 10. Bastards from a basket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. I like that.
1 to 10 bastards from a basket.
Yeah.
Producer from a basket. You like that?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. We found him outside in a basket. Yeah. We brought him in one day. Raised him as our own.
Thanks for bringing back those memories.
Hey, I'll put you back in that basket. All right. So let's do this. And we're going to go over to Max Gumbo Johnson. I want you to lead this off. This is your baby. This is your bastard from a basket. This is your boy. I want to hear it.
Bastards.
Talk to me about what you give this film.
10 bastards from a basket. Fantastic. 10.
10.
10, 10, 10.
Wow.
I'd give it 100 if I could.
I was going to say, if I could offer you 100, would you give 100?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are you offering?
No. But I am offering to let Matthew St. Hoodie tell me what he thinks of this film. 2007, There Will Be Blood. What you going to go with, Matt?
I'm going to second that emotion.
10. Oh.
All right.
10, 10, 10. 10.
Yeah, that might be a theme. Let's see what Hard Sub Savage says. And we're talking about There Will Be Blood, Savage. Bastards from a Basket.
Yeah, I remember watching this film several years ago, and I'm like, it wasn't as good as I thought it was when I watched it this time. It was better. It's hard to make a more perfect film. This is definitely a 10.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Producer, I want to put the pressure on you, so I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to go over to myself. Michael, what do you give this film, Bastards in the Basket? I'll tell you, just like the Riggs and Derricks that are on display here, this thing just taps into something, and it spews perfection all over the place. This is a 10.
Wow.
That's right.
40.
And I actually thought, even just like Savager, I watched it this time, and I was invested.
Yeah.
It grabbed me.
Never fails to.
It drilled deep, deep, deep into my soul.
Yeah. Heck yes.
We almost have a perfect score. Last time Max screwed it up.
I know. Last time I screwed
it up. Now it's on Adam to screw it up.
Now it's Adam's turn to...
He just wants to.
Adam's revenge.
He's smirking.
Listen, we just want you to be honest, Producer from a Basket.
Yeah.
Producer from a Basket, what are you going to give 2007 There Will Be Blood?
Y'all going to call me a bastard, but it's going to be an 8.
Oh,
8.
American. And he did that just because I gave The American a 9.
Nope. I think he's being honest.
Being honest.
There were some explosions in this movie.
Yeah, another explosions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some explosions.
Gosh. 48. Like, sorry. Oh. I think that was too tough to add up.
Yeah. I'm a bit surprised we all stuck with 10. I wondered if someone would lose something along the way. It solidified me. But let's talk about this, Max. Gumbo Johnson, you went way up there. I want you to tell me why you turned around in Texas, went back and said, thank you, sir, may I have another?
I'll tell you what, I read a lot about this movie and, you know, the production of it, and it was playing at a few festivals before it got released, and they were just talking about, oh my God, this thing is fantastic. So I was real pumped up to see it. That was the first time I'd gone to the theater in a long, long, long time. I'm talking about like since maybe I was, you know, since you're a kid and you go see Star Wars or Jaws or Raiders of the Lost Ark, and you're just like, oh my God, that was a life-changing deal. This was the first time that it happened to me as an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, I went and saw it twice. I got off the phone. I was driving back home. I got on the phone. I called my dad. I said, man, have you heard of this movie? You gotta see this. I'm gonna tell you, this thing is so good. It's like Godfather good. This is not just some movie that's good. It's one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. I can't wait to go see it again. I was just ecstatic. Yeah. I was so happy. I was literally just cringing.
Giddy.
Yeah. I wanted to just watch it over and over and over. Mm-hmm. It grabbed my attention from the first frame and did not let go.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to. It'd actually be easier for us to find things we didn't like about the film because you like everything. You could go on
and
on.
Can't think of anything.
Yeah, it's almost like you're speechless.
Yeah.
Like, what do you even say? And this across the board, too. I mean, from Johnny Greenwood's score.
Oh, I love
that. The cinematography, everything. Yeah. He's just rich.
Not a bad element to this film, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely not. Let's shoot over to, let's do it. Let's go straight to Hearts of Savage real quick. You tell me. You gave it a 10. You say it went up a bit. What?
Yeah, I saw it several years ago. I didn't see it at the theater. I saw it when it came out on DVD the first time, and I forgot how old it was, 2007. It certainly holds up. I remember it being really good then, but when I watched it this time, I was astounded at just how good it is at everything across the board. Mm-hmm. There's not a wasted shot. There's not wasted lighting. The costuming is brilliant. The set design is immaculate. It's perfectly dirty. It's hard. And Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, his type of old school method acting is just something you don't see. And it comes across so powerfully, especially as a character who is so emotionally powerful, whether for good or bad, that you may say Daniel Plainview is. He is certainly an emotional character.
Right.
This is just a hands down masterpiece on every single level.
Yeah, this is a love affair. And I think that's what it's going to turn into.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's just too... It's just, there's just too much meat on the bone.
Yeah.
And it's perfect.
Yeah.
And there's just so much to get into. But, Hoodie, There Will Be Blood, 2007. You tell me, you gave it a 10.
Yeah.
I thought you might go 9. I thought he might not get there. It may not spew gold all over the valley.
Oh, no. I love this movie. I just love Old Country more. but I watched it twice this week. And like James says, the second time even this week was better than the first time I saw it this week.
Yeah.
So it gets better and better.
How long has it been since you've seen it previously this week?
Probably a year.
Okay.
I'd say. And I'm glad you mentioned Johnny Greenwood's score, because that's what really got me into this movie from the get-go was the first shot with the orchestra. I knew it was him, so I wasn't expecting much. Go figure. Yeah. I'm not a fan of Radiohead. I wasn't expecting much, and I loved it. I remember I went out, got it the next day, loved the score.
Yeah, Greenwood's a master, just like P.T. Anderson.
Yeah, but the score was just amazing.
I'm like you. I don't like Radiohead at all, but, I mean, this guy did the master, too.
Yeah.
Like, man, this guy is awesome at this. He's great at it.
It worked perfectly. It was, 14 minutes before the first word.
No, it wasn't that long. It was 5 minutes.
Yeah, but
it was... It was 14 minutes before they started talking.
Wasn't, I don't know if it was 14 minutes.
It was, because I stopped it and looked.
Are you sure?
It was 4 minutes and some odd seconds.
Yeah, what was the 14? Word?
It was. Yeah, but he said, there she is, under his breath. I mean, you could barely tell he said anything. It was just a grunt.
Yeah.
Well, the first real scene of dialogue is him.
Is about 14 minutes into the movie.
It's 14 minutes.
Okay, well, he's at the town. He's giving the speech. He's giving the proposition to these townspeople. I think that's that 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
I stand corrected.
And it's the score that carries that along perfectly, that whole opening thing.
You see, as far as Radiohead goes, I'm going to give them a little bit of credit here. They get a little heavy-handed for me sometimes, but there are times I listen to it, especially In Rainbows, if you haven't heard that record.
Yeah.
You sit there, and that's Greenwood right there, and it's like, I didn't know I was supposed to listen to that till you told me I had to. I didn't know that that's what I needed to hear right there. And I think he does that in this film. I mean, the score rounds it over, man, because continually I said, I didn't know I had to have that, and you gave it to me.
Yeah, especially when H.W. loses his hearing and he's carrying it back, just the percussion that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's broken. He's using different time signatures. It's nuts.
It's weird.
Drives me nuts.
It does drive me nuts.
Great.
Listen, I'm going to get into this thing real quickly as far as what I want to get off my chest with this film. This film is about the death of a man's spirit, not his body so much. That's what I liked about this film, that unique aspect there. And at the core of it, it's a tragedy. He's desperately fighting to retain the hope that he can find his way back to goodness. That's the way I see him. Maybe I'm alone there. I have no idea. But to me, Daniel, he's a man lost at sea, but he can somehow still make out the faint shape of an island in the distance. Still has his hand on the rope. He can still pull himself back in. I think throughout nearly the entire film, that's what he's trying to do. He knows the abyss he's staring at because he can see it in Eli. When we meet Eli, as Daniel does, he sees himself just like him in every regard except one. I think Eli is completely comfortable with what he is inside. Daniel, I don't think he is. I don't think he wants to be what Eli is. There's a difference there. The tragedy is there's still good in him. And this conflict is continually shown to us.
Like Vader.
Just like, I actually thought of that, sadly enough. I thought of Darth Vader when I saw Daniel Plainview. He's a beastly example of a man, but is he really? I mean, he lives his entire life of agony with this wrestling of this monster. Throughout the entire film, there's still that sweetness that shows up every once in a while, the way he deals with his child, the way he caresses his head. He takes over the Sunday Ranch. First thing he wants to do is protect Mary. And when it comes to Eli, once again, he doesn't see him, and this guy's a completely loathsome parasite, talking about Eli here, as a simple adversary. He sees him as something different. Everybody's an adversary to him, but Eli's different. He sees himself in Eli, and he loathes that. When he looks at Eli, he sees something that he could potentially be, a completely evil, soulless person. He doesn't want to destroy Eli because he's just simply competition. He wants to destroy him because he thinks that's what he could possibly be himself one day. This existence of his, this turmoil, it's his own battle. He shares it with no one. That is until the family shows up. That's one of my favorite scenes of this film.
Yeah.
Well, the scenes and the exchanges between him and what is supposedly his brother.
Yeah.
We see that one sunny day. He's on the beach laughing, frolicking. He's not the Daniel Plainview we typically have seen up till now. He lets his guard down. He even says he wants to go play at the peach pit with his brother. Get those pretty girls.
Take them to the peach tree dance.
Take them to the peach tree dance. That's what I'm talking about.
Get liquored up. Get them liquored up. Take them down to the peach tree dance.
That's what I wanted. Thank you, Max. But, you know, that distance, that small flicker of humanity starts to shine a little bit brighter that day. Yeah. And then it all comes crashing down. Yeah. The monster that's inside of him, now it's going to rear its head. It is going to be complete. And to me, the most tragic scene in this film, I'll tell you my most tragic scene, is when he, you know, the cursing of his child. Bastard in a basket. Yeah. All of that. Because when he's looking back at his relationship with his child, a truly evil man wouldn't typically see this. This is where the tragedy is. All he wants to recall and all he can recall are those moments of happiness where he's frolicking in the dust with the HW, all this stuff. That's his last final image of what he could have been.
But even in those moments, he's you know, last shot of that moment is him walking away from his kid.
Yeah, so yeah. But when he closes his eyes and as HW walks off, he's seeing what he truly deep down relished. Right? I mean, these are the flickering moments of his relationship with his boy. It's what he's pulling back to.
But you're calling this a redemption story?
No, I'm not calling it a redemption story. I call it a tragedy.
Tragedy,
I think there was potential for redemption. I think Daniel wanted redemption throughout the entire thing. He didn't get it.
He didn't get it.
He absolutely didn't. I think, as a matter of fact, when he says, I'm finished, to me,
because I'm watching this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. I think the monster finished him off. I think that's what it was at the end. That's what I got from There Will Be Blood. I'm going to leave it right there.
I disagree with the thing you said about Eli. Eli's the bad guy in this movie.
Well, that's exactly what I said.
Yeah, but you said something about
his reflection.
His reflection, and Daniel hated this guy.
That's what I said.
That's one of the things that's always...
I'm sorry, did you...
Okay, I don't know. Read it back, whatever you said.
Did you not hear me say he loathes Eli? Eli is a soul-sucking parasite. I even said that.
Yeah. Almost, but you're saying he sees him as a reflection. I don't think he does.
What I'm telling you is he sees what he could be. He does not want to be Eli. When he looks at Eli, he doesn't see competition. He sees something that he could potentially be. Someone who is completely inherently evil and okay with that.
He sees a fraud.
Yeah, right. I think that too.
And it would say what you want about Plainview. The guy's up front about what he wants.
Yeah, he's no fraud.
Yeah, the guy's not. He may use some fraudulent...
Quail hunts.
Made some white lies here and there to get what he wants. But he's going in there saying, look, I want the oil. I want to pay you people for the oil because I want to get in there and make money off of it.
Well, sure, yeah, but I'm telling you, what's at his soul? His soul is not... He's wrestling with something the entire film. He has something inside of him that he's at war with.
I'm sure. The whole being of Plainview is it's family.
Yeah.
Everything in this movie where he's quote unquote a good guy is family. HW, Mary, and then he glances over at Mary's dad and gives him that look. Then he thinks the guy's awesome. His brother, and you know this guy's clinging on to family. And when his son abandons him and he gets rid of his enemy, that's when he says, "I'm done." He says, "I'm done. I got rid of my enemy, and I've set my son off on his own." That's why he says, "I'm done," I think.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's different ways to interpret that. I'm done as in I'm completely finished. I've become the monster I've been fighting my whole life. I think he's fought this. I don't think Daniel Plainview was ever happy with who he was. Eli was. Eli's fine with that. I'm going to seek and destroy and take what I can while I can. Daniel always had a tether back to his humanity through almost the entire film. The entire film. Even at the end, as his soul dies,
the last
thing he sees is what he should have been, what he could have been.
Yeah.
But that's my take on it.
Yeah. We should hear the 8 take on it.
Yeah, go ahead. Adam, 8 take. We're talking about There Will Be Blood. Sorry, I had to get that interpretation, Danny Plain.
Didn't you say 90 seconds at the beginning?
I'm sorry.
You're right.
I bought this movie after it came out, and I let it sit on my shelf for years, never watching it, until Max pretty much forcefully made me watch this movie one day.
Forcefully made me watch the film one day.
It's one of those things where, you know, people try to force stuff on you. You just really don't want to deal with it. And
not receptive to it.
Yeah. I just always put up a fight about watching this. So finally watched it. And honestly, I cannot say a bad thing about the movie other than it's really not that interesting to me. Wow. That's the reason.
It's not that interesting to you.
Yeah.
No.
Did you find yourself being bored?
No, a little bit. Yeah. But it just wasn't. I can't say anything. Everything was great. Great directing, great acting, great music, great this and that.
Honestly,
I just wasn't interested in the movie.
It's a layered film. You got to peel it back. I mean, it's not one that's going to just come to you.
There's nothing
without some work
about
on
this.
Your end, you know.
There's nothing unobvious?
Yeah.
I think all of that was pretty obvious, don't you think? We knew it was coming.
I guess. We should probably be happy with the 8.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad he gave it an 8.
Yeah, maybe so.
I'll take that.
It's a good movie. I'm not going to lie, but I'm not interested in it.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. Well, you know, 8's still a good score, Adam.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, you didn't hate the film. You liked a lot about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it. But let's go over to Matthew St. Hoodie.
Hey.
You went to 10, I do believe.
All the way to 10.
All the way to 10.
Yeah, well, just, you know, listening to you guys talk, one of my favorite things about this movie is just how many interpretations you can have with it.
Yeah.
That's one of the best parts of watching this movie. You can watch it with a different eye and get just as much out of it in every viewing. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, you didn't talk about it, but you said you didn't want to talk about the God aspect of it, which is my favorite part of the whole thing. And then you got the capitalist side, which is, I mean, it's very there. You can't overlook that. Then you have capitalism versus religion. Capitalist versus the stockholder.
Right.
All this stuff is in there. So it's just
the
amazing.
Person, yeah.
It's all there.
Yeah.
So it's really just so open to interpretation. That's the most beautiful thing about this movie. How many other movies can even boast that?
Not many. No, see, I grab onto the angle of what's inside of him. That become very much what I grabbed onto. What really stirred me was what's in him. You know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, he even says that there's a competition in him.
Right.
That's what's inside of him. I mean, maybe he begrudges that, and maybe he wishes he was a little more light, but that's just not his nature. I don't think his nature is inherently evil, and I don't think he's necessarily conflicted with it. He likes being that way. when he's talking to who he thought was his brother, mm-hmm. he's trying to explain to him, if it's in me, it's in you.
Right.
And he seems almost comfortable with it until the betrayal, or, you know, when you expect the worst out of people and you if you reach out hope that maybe they're not as bad, and then you have your hopes dashed and they're proven to be, you know, worthless pieces, whatever.
Let's talk about scenes, guys.
All right.
Let's do it. Let's talk about some things that we can pull out of the film that we remember.
Top three Daniel Plainview scenes.
Let's go. Right now, Max, you talk about it.
I'm going to have to say number three, one of my favorite scenes in this is when they're about to start the well, and Eli comes to him and says, tomorrow I need you to call my name.
Right.
It'll be a simple blessing. It won't hold everything up. Right. Oh, that'll be fine. Oh, yes, no problem. Fine. Okay, that's good. Blah, blah, blah. They go on and on, and then they get up to the well, and he calls Mary up there. Yeah. And Eli's just standing there with his hands down at his waist, staring at him. He gets Mary up, and you know, he says his little deal.
Yeah.
Let's Mary go start the well. And then we've got refreshments, and you know, everybody walks off.
Yeah, the best part, too, was
Eli just standing there staring.
And you knew it was on.
Yeah, but he used Eli's words, too. He's like, Mary,
that's right,
daughter of these hills.
That's right. That's exactly right. And did you pick up the very hoodie right there? That's now it's on. Now this battle's begun right there.
That was beautiful, yeah.
I love that scene. Because here's my take on just real quick on this. I remember when this movie came out, everyone says, he's created one of the greatest villains to ever hit the screen. I went to see it, and I said, they must be talking about Eli.
Right.
Because he's the bad guy in this movie, as far as I'm concerned.
No doubt about it. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's way worse a guy than Plainview.
Yep.
I mean, even his name, Plainview. Look, I am what you see what you get. This is me. So, I mean, there were no preconceived notions about Plainview. He said, I'm going to get you this. And he did it. He built them schools. He got them housing. He did everything he said he was going to do. Eli was just a scheming little bastard.
He was a soul sucker.
Yeah, I hated him. Yeah. That's my number three scene.
Yeah. I like the way it's going. Let's talk about our top three scenes. Hoodie, what about you?
Common thread. Eli's in a lot of my favorite scenes. Go figure. Mm-hmm. My number three, I guess, if we're doing that way, would be the arthritic demon scene where he had to banish
get
the
out,
demon.
Ghost.
That was the creepiest thing. Just him screaming and hearing his voice just go into supernatural places. He killed that. That was fantastic.
You know, sometimes...
Get out!
If I have no key teeth, I will gum you. I'm like, God bless. There is one, I'm not even call it a knock. Do you know that there are a lot of people who say that was terribly miscast, Paul Dano? And I don't get that.
No.
I thought he did a great job.
Perfectly cast. Perfectly
How
cast.
How is that? No.
I don't know.
I don't like the guy's face right off the bat. I just don't like his face.
Did anybody pick up Children of the Corn thing from him? I got that Children of the Corn vibe.
Let's not bring that movie up in relation to this. Please. So,
Malachi?
Yeah.
Ah, please, enough.
Nightmares, Max?
Nightmares. I recently watched about 30 minutes of it. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's terrible.
It is pretty bad. But you're talking about Eli here in the Paul Dano character. Yeah. That's just in synchronicity with Daniel, because to me, there was a bad guy and I wouldn't say a good guy, but there was good and evil at war here.
Yin and yang. I mean, it's a Batman and Joker kind of thing happening.
Mm-hmm. Truly existing. Yeah. So you like that scene a lot. You had to get out of here, ghost. Man.
Yeah.
It was awful. It really scared me. No joke.
It did me too. It was terribly uncomfortable. What about you, Savage?
Gets up and dances.
Let's talk about your number three scene. Then we're going to go over to the producer.
Yeah,
he gave this an 8, so we're going to have to get into that for sure.
Mine is kind of the opening montage, I guess, that first 14 minutes of just the sound and his slow discovery. At first, it's the composite he gave when he broke his
silver.
Leg. Yeah, they were writing down the chemical composition. It's like, okay, it's hard. And then it shows 2 years later where you can see the construction of the derrick, how it starts to evolve. That whole montage to get him up to that first scene where he's addressing the public that's going crazy. And that opening montage is, I guess, my number three, I guess you'd have to say.
You know what? I'm just here to back people up, and I'm going to back
you up.
Gonna
need a montage.
Right. Break, trailer, again, here you go. I'm gonna back you up on that. You know, I liked how we were introduced to him, too, because the first time we know who he is him signing his name.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, sorry to cut you off, but I mean, he falls down the hole.
Yeah.
He's got a broken leg, and he's looking for the silver.
Stuff. Yes, I was going to bring
that
up.
So he grabs, he has a broken leg.
Yeah.
And he's grabbing silver, there she is.
Right.
Yes. Puts it in his shirt, and then...
Then lights the dynamite.
And then he crawls, straight to get it cashed.
Oh. Right. And they pulled no punches with that. You knew how hard it was for him to crawl up out of that hole.
Oh, and then drag himself. I mean, you see him,
And then he did that.
That's exactly
right. He laid
down.
But I like the fact that when we know who this guy is, he's signing his name. Hard. Yeah. Daniel. Plainview.
Underline.
Underline, right. Yeah. All right, producer, let's go over to you for a minute here. Let's talk about scenes. Top three scenes There will be blood.
It's actually, my three is what y'all already talking about at the very beginning. It's just the scene where he's laying in the floor doing his business.
doing his thing, man. That must have been the editor's, director's cut.
Yeah. That was my third one.
Just that wicked introduction, just who is this guy and the way they played that out?
Nope, because I thought it was funny.
Okay. He wanted the comedy.
It was funny.
Yeah.
He's got a broken leg, and he's laying on the floor like that. Just hands behind his head.
We're looking
not
at a picture,
in the world.
By the way.
I literally had a hard time watching that.
It was pretty brutal.
Let's go over to number two scenes, though, Max. As he's reaching for silver, still looking for the big score. Max, number two scene from There Will Be Blood, Paul Thomas Anderson's 2007 film.
I'd have to go. I'd have to cite the whole well blowing sequence.
Yeah.
From start to finish. I mean, you had talked about this earlier, that how the music just starts out, and it just gets insane and crazy from there. You know, it goes to from them dropping that thing down in the well, the oil comes shooting up, blows HW off the roof, knocks him 50 feet into the ground, and they hurry up and run out there and grab HW and bring him back in. Then he's got to run back out and check on the well. Yeah. And the other thing about that scene, if you notice, it was shot. When it started, it was daylight.
Yeah.
By the time it was done and he was sitting in front of the fire, and his partner, I can't remember his name, Elliot or whatever, comes up and says, "Oh, is HW all right?" "No, he's not."
Yeah.
And that's where the scene literally ended, except for when he told him to go in and put the dynamite in the next morning and blow the well.
It's funny how you remember those things, too. He must have sat there all night.
He probably did.
And just how he took those hands and just said forward like he gave orders to an army, you know.
I love that whole sequence. Yeah. And that's the other thing I like about this. There's short scenes, but every scene in this movie is a pretty extended piece of film. Yeah. I mean, like the opening montage, I guess you could call that one scene.
Yeah.
But the well-blowing scene, that goes on for, gosh, 6-7 minutes.
Long time.
The townspeople right at the beginning, that's another 7-8 minute scene. Mm-hmm. All these scenes are substantial amounts of information, not just some little idea that you get and then move on, you know, MTV style.
It never felt unnecessary, though.
Oh, no. It never felt like it dragged at all. Mm-hmm. Not for a second. Not for me.
No, what
so
about
the
you?
Well-blowing scene.
What about you, Savage?
Where he's meeting with Standard Oil.
And the napkin?
Not the napkin.
You mean the napkin on
the
face?
When he's first meeting with him. And he's like, "Well, we'll make you a millionaire from second to second." And what would I do with myself?
Take care of your boy.
Exactly what he did with himself.
I'm going to come into your house and slit your throat.
I'm going to come into your house, see, and I'm going to sneak into your bedroom.
I'm going to find you wherever you live.
I love that. I mean, just it was so intense and out of left field. And the guy was like, "What?
If I've offended you, I apologize."
That is a pretty wicked scene.
Trying to tell me how to raise my family.
And that guy too. He'd never seen anything like it.
No,
and neither have you as a watcher.
No, know? Because you believed it.
Yeah,
and then you know his brother just kind of is like sitting at the table. and just walks away.
I'm gonna come into your house and slice your throat. See, buddy, let's talk a little bit more about what you.
He didn't say "see" that much.
Did he not?
No, I don't think he did. I think I think you're inferring.
He did twist his mustache quite a bit.
Yeah. I think they should have put him in a monocle too. I think he would have looked good in a monocle. Hoodie, let's talk a little bit more about There Will Be Blood. Something you want to get into? Maybe your second favorite scene of the film.
Baptism was a running theme through the whole thing, so it'd have to be the baptism.
Oh yeah,
which I loved. At the beginning scene that HW was baptized with the oil.
Mm-hmm.
Always the baby, yeah.
Yeah, and then when Eli comes to Plainview and says, you know, "Where's our money?"
Yeah,
right.
And he pushes him into the oil
and
picks up the mud in the oil and just starts smacking him in the forehead with it. Right. I thought that was fantastic. And then that's echoed with Plainview's baptism with Eli just smacking him in the face.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Loved it. A little bit of trivia on that I was reading about. They did those scenes in the same day because they wanted each other pretty much
hating each other.
Yeah.
And I think they said they read somewhere they flipped a coin to see who would slap who first, which scene would be first, and Daniel got the first licks in on Eli.
Oh,
man. So he really let him have it.
And Eli was like, "Crap."
Yeah, but they literally said, "Okay, guys, we're going to do these slapping scenes in one day, flip the coin." I believe that's what I read. And then, anyways.
I wish they'd gotten to do it the other way around.
You think so?
Yeah, because think about it. Paul Dano, he's like, "Oh, man, I got to really slap this guy. This is Daniel Day-Lewis." Yeah. He would have taken it easy. And then he'd have been like, "Oh, you slap me. It's my turn."
Yeah, Plainview.
And he would have gone berserk.
I think Plainview had to set the stage for that.
Yeah.
He had to set the tone.
I'm kind of with Max on this one.
I really would have liked
He would have been PO'd.
Oh, yeah. He's like, I was going to hit you hard before. Now I'm really going to hit you.
He's so good at that. I've got my Bane down. I can't do plain view.
That's my second favorite scene, too.
I was just going to go.
Yeah.
Producer, what you got?
I just said it.
Okay.
Which one?
Which baptism?
Probably the Eli slapping Plainview.
Yeah.
God, that was crazy.
You know, to me, I think that's where you could, there's something that happened in Plainview's face right then, you know, when he slapped him. It's like the mania was there. It's like, okay, I'm going to kill you.
That's right.
I'm going to kill you.
Yep. You know? You know what? In that scene, too, he gets up, he goes over and he shakes Eli's hand and says something to him. We never know what it
is.
Yeah. But the look of terror on Eli's face, what do you think he said?
I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to go into your house and slice your throat. See? Yeah.
But there was a joy in that. There was a joy. It's like, okay, I'm going to kill this guy.
Yeah.
There was a joy
and
in
that's,
his face.
That's what the ending is to me, is he finally did it. I'm finished.
Yeah.
But, all right, so I'm going to jump into the end. That's my number three, so screw you guys.
Okay.
That's your number one?
It has to be. The ending is just, there's so much to talk about.
That is such.
That's where he says, I'm finished. Not only does he take, like, any respect away from Eli.
Yeah.
Eli's, you know, you can tell by the way he's dressed that he's actually made something of himself. He's wearing nice clothes. You know, he's got the big silver cross. So he's made some money. So he's successful. And as we know, Plainview can't have that. Before he kills him, he damns him.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right. So that's the best part of the whole thing. He doesn't just take, you know, the money. He doesn't take the respect. He takes his soul, which is just amazing.
It was sweet justice.
It couldn't have ended any better. There's been a lot of crap that I've read about how awful the ending was, but it was perfect. It couldn't have been any better.
That ending just hit my palate so nice. It was just incredible. And you know what I liked about it too was the sweet justice aspect, because you go back to that that baptism scene. I mean, Daniel had to squirm.
Yeah.
He was going to squirm for the bandy track, you know, and if you knew him, that was the last thing he wanted to do. That was humiliating. And so for him to flip the script on him at the end, perfect ending. What's your number one?
Go
ahead.
I was going to say the ending is okay. We've got to take that off the table. Yeah. But since he did it, okay, the ending is my favorite scene too.
I can't help it.
Yeah, it's got it. I mean, we got to talk about the ending anyway. So that's my number one as well. And here's something I want to talk about the ending. Not necessarily the showdown with Eli, but his last speech to HW.
Yeah.
The bastard in the basket.
Yeah. My take on that scene was not so much that he was saying, you're my competition, get out of here, you betrayed me.
Mm-hmm.
My take on that scene was like, okay, this guy's going to be entering this business. He's going to be in a man's world now.
He's going to be tough.
He's going to be, I got to toughen this kid up and make him hate me.
Absolutely. I picked up on that.
Yeah, so I think that's how I played it. That is like he didn't really want to have to tell his son this, and he did consider him his son.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that, as far as I'm concerned. So I think he said, "Okay, if this kid's going to go out here and do this, then this is what he needs to hear. I got to get this kid pumped up and give him the truth,
sure,
and set him out here on with the right frame of mind.
Tough love
to take me out.
Tough love. Yeah, I don't think Daniel was a terrible father.
I don't think he was either.
I mean, you look at the conditions they were in.
Yeah,
with this guy, I mean, there was also I wouldn't say tenderness. But there was protection. There was a guide, a guidepost. He was a guidepost to his kid.
Yeah.
Tried to teach him well. Tried to take care of him. Tried to make him strong. I mean, he wasn't a bad father.
No.
Until he sent him off.
Yeah, but.
Yeah.
He was sending him off to be taken care of and have him taught. To learn how to deal with his.
He was sending him off because he didn't want to deal with, like, his own failure.
You mean as far as when he went off to deaf school? To being,
when he put him on the train, which was, like, one of the coldest things ever.
Yeah, that was cold. But
it was cold.
It wasn't easy for him to do that.
I get it.
No, it wasn't easy because he kept asking the guy. All he wanted to know is his room big? Does he have a big room? How big is his room? He kept asking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't Al. It was Elliot or whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to go over to the producer real quick. He's over in his producing cube, his little producing island. why don't you spew something out about this film one more time? You gave this an 8. I want to know, what is it that that you think keeps you from a 10?
I'm not going to say anything bad about the movie. For me personally, I just wasn't interested in it.
Okay. What was your favorite thing about this film?
My favorite scene is the one where he meets Paul and they're going over the land. And right at the end, he's like, what's he say?
If I drive up there for no reason,
and you'll find you've lied to me. I'll take back more than my money.
Is that fair?
Is that fair is the best part. Is that fair to you? And shakes his hand. It's like,
is that fair that you kill me? Sure.
Yeah.
It's the nicest, politest way to ever threaten somebody.
Yeah.
Paul was the smart one.
Yeah. You just crawled out your mother's filth. You boy. They should put you in a glass
Jar Jar. And it's that is what makes this film great, is it's quotable. Oh, and I think that goes back straight to Daniel Day-Lewis.
It does.
Is this his best performance?
Yes.
I mean, Gangs of New York is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. This is an acting class.
Well, the material's so good too.
I haven't seen Lincoln. I've heard he's pretty.
He's fantastic in that. He's better in this.
Yeah, but who could read these words on a page and even think to do that with him?
Oh, no.
I mean, no way.
Well, no way.
And before he deserved it.
And before we forget, though, the one scene without Daniel Plainview I thought was really resonant is the dinner scene, the Sunday dinner scene.
Sure.
After Eli's oil baptism.
You are a stupid, stupid man.
You know, I just thought about that. That scene separated him from Daniel a little bit, too. I don't think Daniel hated the people in his life as much. But boy, Eli sure did. Yeah.
Eli had contempt for the people in his life. He didn't care about anybody in that church.
No.
No,
he just wanted struck this, me as like a televangelist. Like
he just wanted the celebrity of it, and he wanted the respect and the money and all that. So it's like when he said, "Well, you know, we're gonna build roads." And he said, "Well, where's the first road gonna go to?" And he said, "The church." Well, that's the first place it's going.
Right.
What do you guys, Savage? What other thing you want to get into with this film? There Will Be Blood, 2007, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Again, I mean, we're just picking the ripest of a ripe tree here. Everything is great. I like the brother. I liked his feigned meekness, and I liked how he kind of pleaded at the end there. I mean, when he knew the jig was up, it was just like, let me go.
Just let me go.
I thought that was Daniel's last hope at possibly becoming something better. He had some family he could rely on. He had some family that could bring him back.
Yeah, because it's a family affair.
Well, he thought he did, too. I mean, you look at it that way. He thought, oh, wow, look, this guy's my brother, and
that's what I'm talking about.
Came to look for me. Well, yeah, I get what you're saying. We agree.
We agree. Thank you.
One thing I want to bring up is all the obvious references to Kubrick in this film.
You mean as far as
a lot of the shots and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, there is a bit of a Kubrick thing going on there, for sure.
I'd say very much, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I was watching this, that's all I thought about was this is obviously a Kubrick or a love of Kubrick films.
I'll bet you there was a lot of a reference there. Maybe P.T. Anderson defaulted back to a lot of that work to pull some inspiration.
Especially the ending scene, the bowling alley.
Very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, did anybody pick up any CGI in this at all?
I'm sure there was something in there CGI.
If it was, it was pretty flawless. The closest thing I could pick out is the other two Derricks when they had three rigs going. But
why would you need a CGI?
I doubt it.
No, that's what I'm asking. It's because I kept going back to the set design because, you know, I'm kind of in the trades. I don't like it when mechanical things are obviously fake.
I can't imagine they wouldn't have actually built those.
Exactly. And it was so flawless, and it was so well crafted. Then the entire film is well crafted, but I keep going back to the set design and the cinematography.
Speaking of the set design, here's one of the things I didn't pick up on it right away. It's one of these things that sort of creeped into my head as I've watched it over and over and over. I don't know how many times I've seen this thing. Every movie you've seen like this where it's like, all right, this is a boom town where it's just all this oil and it ends up like this paint your wagon scenario. Yeah. There's 100 people walking through the street and they're all singing and they got these bright clothes on and everybody's throwing money at strippers. There was none of that stuff going on in this. Yeah. He got there. It was a stark, barren desert landscape.
Yeah. Yeah.
He found the oil, built the schools, put up the church, and it was still a stark, barren desert landscape. There were not that many people around except for the people that were already there and the workers he brought in. It never turned into this, gay 20s style.
Yeah.
You know, whoa, the streets are lined with gold now. Look at us go, sort of thing.
It was honest in that regard.
Any other movie of this type, someone of a lesser director, I think a lot of them would have gone for that. Say, oh, look at how great everything is. And
this is some of the best cinematography I've ever seen.
It really is.
This won the Academy Award. I can't remember the guy's name. Everybody defaults back to two things that make it over the top perfect, and that is the, once again, score.
Yeah.
And cinematography.
It's absolutely beautiful to watch.
I believe that was Robert Elswit.
Yeah, I think it was. Well, he won the Academy Award for it.
Yeah.
And about halfway through the film, I thought, okay, I'm not just watching, well, that's a good looking film. I'm going to really study how good this is.
Yeah.
What about you, Hoodie? What do you have to add technical-wise from this film?
Technical? Nothing.
On board? All aboard?
I can't add anything to what you guys have already said. I think I agree completely and got nothing.
Oh. Hey, back to that baby. You brought this up good. Very well.
You brought that up good.
You know what? You brought that up so good. It just felt good. Let me rephrase. You brought up a good point. Is that better?
Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm. You brought up a good thing. Earlier in the film, when you talk about HW being baptized as a baby, I guess what I'm taking from that is this was one of his workers. Actually, that was his dad.
That was his
died.
Dad.
Yeah, he died in the beginning in the well.
Yeah.
Got crushed by something in the head.
Got hit in the head. In the head.
With right.
Spike.
They had this little commune going, and that's where Daniel took over the parenting responsibilities of H.W.
Would an evil man do that?
Yeah, would an evil man do that? That's my point right there.
This is my son, H.W.
You know, I think I haven't really revealed my favorite scene. I'm going to do my favorite scene inside the favorite scene. I could say the ending, but to me, the one that almost made me stand up and cheer was when he reveals to Eli, oh, no, it's fine. Those wells have already been drained. Thank you. After he makes him go through all this humiliation, he put him right back in the seat he put him in earlier.
Yeah.
I literally almost wanted to cheer for that. Probably my most hated person I've ever seen on film. Hate this guy.
But all my favorite scenes, man. He was in pretty much all my favorite scenes.
Producer, I want to ask you about that bowling pin scene. Did you see that coming?
No.
You had no idea he was actually going to bludgeon him to death with a bowling pin.
No.
Did you like the build up with the bowling balls he was throwing?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I think that scene was great.
Yeah.
What else do you mean to say?
Nothing. That's okay.
Like a girl. And he does the Planet of the Apes thing
squealing.
On him. At
the end. Hey, did you notice too when he's throwing those bowling balls? There's one great shot. It's just a still shot, and it's when I guess
Kubrick.
Very Kubrick-ish for sure. Yeah,
it was Kubrick.
But apparently, a glass of milk or something gets knocked over by a bowling ball and it splashes onto the camera.
Yeah.
And it oozes down the camera. Yeah.
They did that with oil earlier.
They did
in
that
the
with
movie.
Oil too. Yeah.
Yeah, just works, man.
Yeah. I don't think the oil one was on purpose. Though.
I'm sure it wasn't.
There will be milk.
Yeah. I'm sure the milk one wasn't either.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and wrap this thing up, guys. We could go on and on.
Yeah.
We could talk for a day.
Maybe
two. Literally thought we would make this a two-parter.
Maybe we should do a Q after hours.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll do a Q after hours.
Dirty.
Ooh, I got candles.
No. I wonder if it'll be perfectly dirty.
Matt, bring the scented oils.
Perfectly dirty. Oh, I have one question. Why was this movie rated R?
Heavy themes.
Heavy themes.
We always default back to heavy themes.
It says it on
themes.
Here, for some violence.
Well, he bludgeons a guy to death with a bowling pin. What are you talking about?
Did you see Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? He ripped the guy's heart out.
A little bit of camp beating. There, you know. I would tell you this much. If I sent my kid to this film, I'd be slightly concerned how it could damage him. I mean, what if he turns out like one of these people?
Heavy themes.
It's
heavy
just
themes.
Oh,
it's I
just
would encourage
themes.
My kids to watch this movie.
I'll tell you what, that's it for this one. Let's wrap this thing up, guys.
Okay.
We could go on for days. We have to make the hard decision to quit now.
We can
2007.
We can keep talking after we stop recording.
Right. 2007, There Will Be Blood. That's what this was. My God, what a great conversation. I love talking about this film. If you haven't seen it, do it. Stop what you're doing right now. Go watch it. Netflix. Instant streaming.
We'll wait.
That's what we do. So it's on Netflix currently if you want to watch it. If you haven't seen it, highly recommended. Is this one of the top rated films we've ever done?
That's in the American.
Yeah.
I think the second, yeah.
Should have been first.
Should have been first, yeah.
That's what I said about the American.
Yeah, fantastic film. So
now
hope
I know
you enjoyed
you
this
feel.
One. You know what we need
the
to
pull
do?
Up?
Yeah, go ahead, producer. What is it?
I was going to make a stupid joke. Keep
well,
going.
No doubt about that. let's let Daniel Plainview speak for us. Let's end a little bit of Plainview. We'll come back, get into a quick top three. We'll just see what happens with that. Big reveal, and on to the next one, guys. But here it is, a piece from the film we talked about, 2007. There Will Be Blood. We'll be back in just a minute.
Who was nursing you, poor Eli? One of Bandit's sows? That land has been had. Nothing you can do about it. It's gone. It's had.
If you would just you take this lease, Daniel.
Drain it, Eli, you boy. Drain dry. I'm so sorry. If you have a milkshake, and I have a milkshake, and I have a straw, there it is. That's the straw, you see. Watch it. My straw reaches across the room and starts to drink your milkshake. I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Don't bully me, Daniel.
All right, so that ends it, and there it is. There's a piece from the film we got into tonight, 2007. There Will Be Blood. Let's talk about this real quick. Top three milkshake flavors. I'm going to go number three. Caramel.
Caramel?
Or is it caramel? There's always a...
I say caramel.
Caramel.
I don't know. What the hell is nougat? I don't care. Max, number three.
Number three for me, strawberry. That solid deserves, strawberry.
That deserves to be up just a bit. I'll go ahead, three.
Come on!
Right.
What about you there, producer?
I like mixed flavors, so I'm going strawberry lemon.
Ooh,
that sounds tart.
Disgusting.
So tasty.
That's a bit tart.
Where do you even get that?
Yeah, right?
Strawberry lemon.
Sonic. Strawberry lemon.
My God, lemon. It sounds more like chapstick. What about you there, Hoodie?
I didn't realize it was flavors, but there was this little place that I went this one time in a small town, and it was vanilla.
It was vanilla.
It was great.
What about you, Savage?
Arby's, Jamocha.
I'm going to go with the green-flavored St. Patrick's Day one at McDonald's.
That's the flavor?
Green. I don't know. Green flavor.
Is that sort of like red drink?
Wait a second.
St. Patty Shake.
I was trying to be inspired. That was off the cuff. I don't know what flavor it is. The Shamrock Shake. What's yours, Max?
Guys, do you those standbys? Chocolate. Come on.
Come on.
That's what they use for the fake oil in this thing. The same stuff they make chocolate milkshakes out of. Did you know that?
No.
You know what? I didn't. I left it off my, did you know?
Wait. Fake oil?
Yeah, the fake oil in this movie. Yeah, I hate to tell you, it was fake.
The oil in this movie was the same material they used to make McDonald's milkshakes. Second favorite flavor of milkshake there, producer.
Strawberry banana.
He's always mixing flavors.
I told you I like mixed flavors.
He's a mixed flavor guy.
He's all mixed up.
I have a very complicated palate.
Yes, you do. What about you, Hoodie, number two?
Cookies and cream.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's really good.
That is a good milkshake.
That's not a milkshake.
What are you talking
about?
That's
an ice cream.
You can't make.
You can get that. You can get that at Sonic.
I'm talking. Oh, okay, I stand corrected. You can actually go get a cookies and cream milkshake at Sonic.
Check.
Yeah,
it
go
out.
Check it out.
You can
right
get
now.
A jalapeno.
I've
chocolate.
Never heard it. Oh my God! What's your number two, Savage?
McDonald's strawberry.
Specifically McDonald's?
Yes, specifically McDonald's strawberry. Ugh. They make the best strawberry shake.
You know what? I don't give a damn where I get it. Just give me vanilla. No. Vanilla is my number one. My wife makes fun of me. She goes, "What do you mean vanilla? You go for ice cream, you get vanilla. You go buy a candle, you get vanilla."
Yeah,
I love vanilla.
I get cinnamon apples.
Is that your number one?
No, my number one after tonight is butterscotch. That was a fantastic shake.
Did you like that, butterscotch?
That was fantastic.
I do like a nice buttery butterscotch.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
What's your
Werther's original.
What's your number one there, Adam? What is it?
Chocolate peanut butter.
And that's what you had tonight.
That is.
See, the idea was, damn it, the idea was we were all going to slurp right now.
They would never have made it.
We drank them.
You got
before
smalls.
The show started.
Well, next
you got
time, don't,
smalls.
Well, next time,
I tell you
don't
what,
buy such good shakes.
The mediums were like a 5-gallon bucket.
Well,
they were
nice
time,
and large.
Next time, go get some crappy shakes from, I won't say where.
McDonald's.
Yeah, you okay. That's what I was going to say.
Did you give your number one yet?
Not loving it.
What is it?
A place in East Tennessee called Pal's. Best chocolate milkshake I've ever had.
Okay. Pal's. All right.
Chocolate.
Did we get yours?
Chocolate.
How much did they pay you for that advertisement?
Yeah. Pal's.
No plug.
What Karen's, I got a new favorite. Karen's the Elvis chocolate peanut butter banana. Had it tonight, and it was delicious.
It was good.
The Elvis.
Yeah.
Number one.
Man, that makes me want another milkshake. I wish I had like a super long, strong that would straw.
Reach Karen's.
Reach across the state.
I didn't like the way it smelled. You had to drink that from across the room. Yeah, there you go. There it is, right there. Let's end this show right now. Let's do it. Big reveal. That's this next one coming up from Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality, high quality outerwear. What is it? What's it going to be this next week?
I'm so excited.
All is lost.
Oh, that's awesome. No doubt.
No diggity.
Have you seen this film?
I have.
Okay, All is Lost.
I sat on the edge of my seat.
Really?
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
I
watched it last night.
No joke.
No
Why
doubt.
Why are we doing this then?
I think it's a good one to talk about.
It's a fantastic one to talk about.
I loved it.
Not very dialogue heavy.
I don't know.
We got this guy over here.
Well, look at this guy over here.
I'm guessing Adam has not seen it.
I'm just going to go throw this out there. I absolutely hate Robert Redford.
There we go.
Wait till you see him when he's playing with his dinghy for 2 hours.
Yeah, the guy is so terrible. Robert Redford. What an unaccomplished
what a
nobody.
Well, if
what has the
him.
Guy done?
Well, Adam, let me tell you what.
If, that's if, not, I don't even want to start. This will be another show.
If you hate the sound of his voice, you'll love him in this.
Right.
Yeah, so that's next week. Great pick. There, I almost said there will be blood.
Great pick, there will be blood. Thanks, there will be blood.
All is lost. Could have called this film All is Lost, too. A lot lost in this one. But yeah, All is Lost next week. Robert Redford's Tale at Sea with him in a volleyball named Wilson.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one.
Wrong movie.
He has some dreadlocks.
Yeah. No. We're talking about the film from last year. Him, Lost at Sea. Very dialogue ridden, but everything else heavy, I think.
I thought I was going to spring something on you guys. Go figure.
Saw it at the theater.
Absolutely. All right, guys, let's wrap it up. That's next week's show. All is Lost. Come back here for that. And this week, we end it with our top three milkshakes inspired by the film There Will Be Blood 2007. And next week, All is Lost. We're going to cue it. We're going to review it. And however did you say, good night.
Okay, Dracula. With my milkshake. Oh, I love my milky, milky shake, baby. Milky milkshake.
Milk it, milkshake. Milk it, milkshake.